This is a KUNV Studios original program.
The content of this program does not reflect the views or opinions of 91.5 Jazz and More, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, or the Board of Regents of the Nevada System of Higher Education.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk UNLV, KUNV 91.5. I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Sammy Scales, and I am Dr. Tanya Crabb. And welcome, welcome.
Welcome, welcome, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We have a special guest today from here on campus. We have Susie Smith, who's the Director of Diversity Initiatives. And we also have Otis Henderson today. So we're very excited and happy that you guys joined us here on the podcast. And we're going to just have a casual conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Otis, let's start with Otis. Otis, can you tell us about your journey? How did you end up here at UNLV?
Oh, do you want the long version or the short version? I'll try and give you the cliff notes, since we're all accustomed to that at some point in our lifetime.
Okay.
Prior military service, was in the Army for enough time to retire with a pension. Came back here to school because you're never too cool for school. Came back here to UNLV, studied hospitality management. Started working at the Thomas and Mack. From there, moved over to Diversity Initiatives, and I found it to be a very pleasurable job. There's a lot of work to be done in diversity, equity, and inclusion. That's been ongoing since, you know, one could argue since the 50s and 60s. So it's good to see how far we've come, but obviously with the current events going on, we've got a long way to go.
Absolutely.
Well said. Very well said.
Oh, and Otis, thank you for your service and your sacrifice.
Absolutely.
Much appreciated.
Just wanted to put that out there. And lovely, lovely Susie Smith.
So my name is Susie Smith. I'm Director of Corporate and Community Relations. Prior to that, I was Director of Development, which was the fundraising arm for Diversity Initiatives, and I still kind of do that. But now, in my current role, I fundraise a little bit on the side, but my bigger focus is supporting our students and our staff in our community partnerships, and of course bringing opportunities to campus for our staff, our students, and our faculty.
Okay. Can I ask just a follow-up question?
Yes, please.
So how did you get here? Like, when we're talking origin stories, how did you end up at UNLV of all places?
Well, I can be long-winded, so please cut me off when you need to. But I started here 30 years ago. I was in my early 20s, and I got a phone call from someone who was a family friend and at the time was the director of human resources and said, "Hey, Susie, we have this opportunity at UNLV, and I thought about you. Would you be interested in applying for this job?" And it was a position in the admissions office, and that was 30 years ago. So that's how I got here. And I've worn many hats over the 30 years, and I'm very excited to be where I am today in Diversity Initiatives.
Wow. Excellent. Excellent. So let's start with some questions. Dr. Crabb, would you like to start out with questions for them?
Why not? Right. So let's talk about this term diversity. Mm-hmm. You know, what is your definition of diversity within the context of our institution? And how does this definition guide your work? So it's a two-part questions. Let's start with, how do you define diversity in the context of the work you do here?
Okay. Well, it's a great question because defining it in the context of the university, 30 years ago when I first landed here, diversity was very different. As a matter of fact, there was no word diversity in the context of what we do. It was an affirmative action. And in 1993, our Board of Regents approved the creation of the Affirmative Action Office. And John Lujan was hired as the director at that time. And shortly after his hire, a young lady who was an African-American alum was hired, and she's the one that wrote the very first affirmative action plan. And that was very different from what we see now. That plan, with the university's intention, was to support education and workplace opportunities for minorities. But as we know today, that's very different. So we support so many different communities now. That includes first generation, LGBTQ, LGBTQ, different religious backgrounds. What am I missing, Otis? First generation. There's just so many different communities that we support in diversity now.
Yeah, that's a good question, Otis. So what services do your department offer? I know you work over there with Ya and Jose as well. And you kind of work closely with SDP because I do see you in some of our meetings as well. So what services do your office offer?
We do, and we try and plug in with SDP as much as possible. Our illustrious president commented not too long ago that we should seek to collaborate with as many organizations as possible on campus. And that's our mandate, and that's what we strive to do. So in doing that, you know, obviously we provide some services to the students themselves in the form of scholarships, for example, utilizing the intersection, which is one of the arms of diversity initiatives, and providing those emergency funds to those students that may need them in a time of crisis. I think the pandemic showed that we all are one step away from a crisis, and anything that our office can provide to its students in those times is greatly appreciated, not only by the students, but also by the parents who sometimes send their kids across the country to go to school in unknown land, and sometimes they're off by themselves. And the services that we provide and the resources that we have on campus act as, you know, the surrogate mom and dad in providing them with what they need to live a livable life while at the same time going to school. And we all know how hard that is to get an education.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Fantastic.
Now, I have to say that I'm familiar with a couple of those things. I'm familiar with the Student Diversity Program because, well, I hung out there a lot because they have chips, and also it's just a cool place to be.
Yeah.
And it's a cool place to meet the students, and it's wonderful to see the different activities that happen there. I'm also familiar with the Intersection through their First Generation Program, as well as the help that they do with students with around immigration and places like that. So I'm really glad that you are here. And as you mentioned, you know, this being making it more of a home situation for students, I was wondering, and I'm going completely off script, I was wondering if you could share some of the feedback that you've received for students around the programs that exist on campus for them.
Well, you know, I think when you look at wanting feedback and what are those key metrics that leadership should look at to whether or not a program on campus is successful, I think the number one would be retention. Are your students coming back to school? You know, and that speaks to the type of environment that campus is creating for our young students. So when you ask the question, I say retention, that speaks volumes. If they're coming back, they want to come back, not because they have to come back. Because at the end of the day, they're spending either their money or they're taking out significant loans to want to help. And, you know, surveys help with defining where that need is most needed. But I think talking to the students and just seeing them come back and seeing the participation with the student organizations when they show up, you know, oftentimes some of the events that take place on campus happen, you know, 6:30, 7 o'clock at night. And to see students that late at night wanting to participate, it speaks to they want that feeling of belonging. And are they feeling that? Again, you look at the retention rate.
Absolutely. I definitely agree that surveys is a great way of tracking whether or not your program is working. But just like you say, and being at those programs late in the evening with those mm-hmm. students, they have a tendency to come up to you, especially when they see you over and over and over at different events, and actually will really tell you exactly what they're thinking. I had that happen during Persian New Year. I think it was last week when we were there at Persian
Correct,
New Year.
Last week.
So I had a male student that sat with me and really told me how he felt about the campus, about how he felt about his classes, his sense of belonging here on the campus. So those are all great metrics of taking a look at whether or not and assessing whether or not your programs are working. So excellent, excellent.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that because I have similar experiences. Like whenever I've showed up at one of your events, my metrics is also hugs, because students will see other students across campus, but they'll also see the participants or the people who host these spaces, and their whole being lights up. Yeah. They light up because they feel a sense of connection. They right. feel like they're being seen. They feel like they're being understood. And I love that you've talked about how much diversity in terms of what's covered, it's race, it's yeah. ethnicity, it's gender, it's ability, it's education level, yes. it's type. So I really like that. So can you give us some example of some programs or initiatives that you have had that have impacted the campus's diversity and inclusion.
Well, I can share with you, recently we just embarked upon a partnership with a couple of corporations in our community. And through those partnerships, we have been able to secure paid internships for our students, and our diverse students. And of course, one of our main goals is going after corporations that have a diversity mission, because that's so critical. And when we meet with the corporations and talk about the need for the paid internships, and I emphasize paid internships.
Absolutely.
Yes, the money is what's important to those students. And also what's important is for them to not show up at a job site and just become like a file clerk or someone who's there shredding papers. We want them to get real world experience, and that's what they get, at least with these two companies that we've partnered with so far. So they've gotten a paid internship, real world experience. We've also made sure that they got etiquette training, interview training, knowing what to say and how to answer questions, knowing how to appear at an interview. And you know, you dress for the job you want, not the one you have, is what I always said. So those types of internships are very important, very key. And now we're working with an additional corporation where we're talking about global paid internships. And these internships that I'm speaking about, their starting wages are $25 an hour for students who are, you know, earning a living wage and also gaining true real world experiences. So those are important.
That's excellent, because it seemed like you're working with the student from start to finish.
Exactly.
And when I say from start, I mean sitting them down and going through a mock interview with them.
Yes.
So they can know potential questions that may pop up doing these things, and also proper attire,
mm-hmm,
for when they're going to these interviews.
Yes.
So I think that's great. You know, and paid internships, you know, that definitely will get your attention.
Absolutely.
When you say paid internship. So that means money.
And then to speak further on that, one of the corporations that we just finished an internship round, and we're embarking on renewing that contract with them. Out of the, I want to say, 80 students that were hired, or I'm sorry, that were selected for this paid internship program, they hired on a permanent basis, on a permanent level in positions, 70% of that workforce that were our students.
Wow.
There. So that's what I call success. And we hope to do much more better in the future.
Definitely. That is success.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I heard so many things there. I heard leveling the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
You know, providing the same opportunities and access as everyone else.
Because absolutely.
I think that's the thing that's sometimes missed in these programs, is that people who are coming from different experiences don't have the same level of access or experience.
Exactly.
But they're going to the same arena as people who've prepped for this their whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that it's an all-encompassing program that you run, where not only are we sending you to the job, but we're actually preparing you for them.
Absolutely.
So that you have a chance to success, and there's an opportunity for this to be something bigger than just a one-off. So, yep. Yeah, that's
absolutely
really exciting. And as you were talking, I'm like, should I text my child?
have your child give us the call. But
like,
you know, when I'm talking to these corporations, first when I reach out to them, I make sure that they do have a diversity mission. And then I think about myself when I was a college student here. I'm first generation, and I didn't know what I didn't know.
Yeah.
Of course, now I do realize a lot of the things that I didn't know. And so I think with that mindset, you know, when I'm helping the first generation students, or, you know, other students that need these opportunities that wouldn't generally have these opportunities put in front of them because of their different backgrounds. And so that's just important. And I think it's critical for their future and the future of the growth of our community.
And I also love that you're not paying them chump change.
Me too.
That spoke to me a lot of times, because oftentimes you get these opportunities, but you're undervalued.
Yes.
Or you're underutilized, or
yes,
you're under-resourced. So I love that you're looking to make them better professionals in the future by starting the standards higher rather than lower. So,
because if you think about it, one of these kids, two of these kids, all of these kids may be our future leaders.
Absolutely.
And so we need to train them and prepare them in the best ways possible.
Absolutely. I think it's very important to have high expectation, because no one's going to rise to low expectation. There's no rise there.
Yes.
So, you know, when you said earlier, you don't know what you don't know. That
right.
was one of the reasons why I didn't go into college right after high school, because I didn't know about financial aid. Mm-hmm. I'm first generation as well. So it took me some time to get there, but I got there.
I'm with you on that. I'm first generation, and I wasn't a traditional student. I took my very first college class at the age of 25. Mm-hmm. And I worked here at the university, and I still didn't know what I didn't know. And if it weren't for connections and people that I knew on campus, I have no idea how I would have gotten through that journey.
Yeah, I sat in my first class at 42.
What?
Get on.
42 years old. I was older. I was almost as old as my instructor.
We need some applause for that.
Once I got going, I was on a roll, and I just went all the way through. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Congratulations.
So again,
awesome.
You don't know what you don't know. So it's good to talk to students, no matter where I see them at, on campus, off campus, about college. Since I moved here December 27th of last year, but I did find out where Dillard's is. So I've been going to Dillard's to shop, but there's a young man that worked in women's shoes there. And I see him often when I go. And so I always go over to him and say,
is his name Al?
I don't remember his name. No, it's not Al Bundy. But I do talk to him and tell him this can't be your life, and you can't support a family with, you know, two or three kids working here. So you have got to get in college. So I talked to him about going to college. And so now he's, of course he tells me when he sees me, I've enrolled at the community college. So he's supposed to start there, I think this either summer or fall. One of the two. But I talk to students about college because there's an opportunity for them to go.
And when you have the opportunity to talk about college to the strangers that you'd never think about, I'll share a quick story with you. I was at a place called Famous Dave's. It's a barbecue restaurant here in town. And I was picking up dinner that night. No, I wasn't cooking. So I was picking up dinner. And I met the young man who came out to hand me my bags, and he saw that I had on a shirt that said UNLV, and he says, hey, are you a professor there? Do you teach there? And I told him what I do, and then I asked him, well, do you know about UNLV? He says, I'm a student at UNLV, and it's exciting to hear about scholarship opportunities. Can I reach out to you, and can you help me? And I asked him, absolutely, tell me what you're majoring in. And I asked him a bunch of questions about himself and how he landed here in Vegas. Well, he came from Washington by himself. He saved up money, came here by himself, drove in his car, and his car is where he was living at the time.
Wow.
And
wow.
I told him, you need to call me right away because I need to get help to you so that we can get you to college, through college, and of course get you a roof over your head.
Absolutely.
And he's now finished college and is working in one of the hotels. And I've mentored him through that time, and those types of stories just does the heart good.
Yeah, absolutely. I love those kind of stories. Let me ask both of you this. It's a question for both of you. If money was not an issue, and with the departments that you're working in now, what would you like to see happen? Not just here on campus with UNLV, but in the community as a whole. If money was no issue, you had all of the money that you needed to get your hands on, what would happen in the realm of diversity for you?
I would say that hunger would go away. There would be no unfed mouths. And everyone who wanted a degree in a college education would get just that and then some.
Absolutely. Great, great. Otis.
I would say and it goes along the lines of equaling the playing field, is free tutoring wherever you live. If you're in the dorm, there's tutors regardless of your major that are at the dorm, because part of it, you know, you want to look at the retention. Why are people staying in school? Can you stay in school? Do you have the grades to stay in school? Aside from all that, do you have the skills to even get to school? Mm-hmm. And where are you competent at? What are you lacking in? And what we find, what I've seen, you know, anecdotally at the very least, is some groups are unprepared for college. And how do we get them to that level? So if money was no object, how do we create that atmosphere to get people just on a level playing field?
Wow.
And part of that, speaking of internships, you know, we talked about paid internships. Well, how about those unpaid internships that still do really well in the world? People will still look at those as being significant, but people who are struggling to get through school can't take those internships because they have to take the paid internships.
Yeah.
So in a perfect world, even those hard to get unpaid internships, make them paid. At least if the company doesn't pay for it, the school would pay for it. or some type of fund would pay for it, so that they can take that, so they can take that other experience outside of being forced to take something.
You know, maybe I might get in a little bit of hot water for this, but why are we not paying people for working for us? Like, that's the thing that I, you know, coming through my own program, you know, the fact of the matter is I'm contributing to the well-being of the organization. I am causing your capital to rise. So why aren't we paying them? Why aren't we giving them a stipend? Why aren't we appreciating the value that they bring? I understand that certain situations and certain circumstances, they won't. But I, to your point, it's a real disadvantage in terms of talent pool, because you're leaving out some of the talent pool that would, inevitably bring even more to the company, but they cannot apply because financially it's just not feasible for them. So I am, let's try and make internships paid, because you're getting value from those students.
You know, and I think that's probably a conversation for another day. You're asking companies to go against the grain of what they're used to doing. You know, and if you want to go down that route, it could come down to budget. Is there budget for a company to start paying unpaid internships? If I'm sitting in a company and I'm trying to make our stockbrokers money, our stockholders money, I would say keep it unpaid. And if they keep coming, we'll keep doing it.
That's what I mean by starting trouble, because you're gaining revenue from these people. You know, oftentimes they're increasing your revenue base. They're making it possible for you to serve more clientele. So you are making more money. So, but anyway, that's a hill for another day.
And it is hot water. You know, you get into the short term profits over long term profits, and you know, choose your poison.
I understand. Yes.
So, if someone wanted to actually contact your office or find out where your office is, how would they contact your office?
So they can either come by the sixth floor, 607, room 607 in the diversity offices. Or they can give us a call. Otis, what's our main number? 702-895. Sorry, we don't call ourselves very often. 895-5580. Or they can email us at our general email account, which is diversityworks@unlv.edu.
Okay, fantastic. And you're in that same office, Otis?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, fantastic. Sounds good. So in closing, what departing words would you have for our listeners? In closing.
That's a good question.
That's why I asked it. I always think it's a good question. Actually, I stole it from Dr. Crabb. That's usually what she said.
I would say in closing, diversity, equity, and inclusion, that type of work is still needed.
It's critical.
It's critical not only to retain our student population, but to also grow our faculty as well. And until that equality is reached, work still needs to be done.
Yes. And there was a student that I met one day, and I asked him the question, why did you choose UNLV? And he said, because it's the only school that I went on a visit to, and I met a professor that looked like me. So we need to increase those numbers of professors and our students in diversity.
Well, that was a comment that was made inside of the MSI summit on yesterday, increasing the faculty so that we have professors that reflect our students.
Yes, so, it's so important.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah, it's always nice to have a professor standing before you that looked like you.
Yeah,
you know, and of course, maybe not in every class, but at least one or two out of the six or seven classes you're going to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I want to share a short story on how I decided to go for my doctorate. When I was working at Fresno State, I was walking through the campus and I saw an afro. It was an amazing afro. It was big, it was beautiful, it was glowing. And when I followed the afro, because I was like, who does that belong to? And I sat down, I met this woman. Her name is Dr. Marnell Niles. And that was the first time I'd met a black woman doctor. She was a doctor of communications, and I was like, wait, we do that? Like, that's the thing we do? That's the thing we can do? And honestly, that was the spark that lit for me that said that this is possible for me, not just because she was a doctor and not just because she was a black doctor. She was a black doctor with natural hair, living her best Black Dexter life. And I was like, wow. So I can identify a lot with the you can't be what you've not seen. You know, it hadn't occurred to me that was a path I could take.
That's
until
amazing.
I saw her. And I was like, wait a minute. Okay.
That's a great story. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
So with that being said, I think this is bringing us to the end of the show.
Well, we have a couple minutes left, at least according to our intrepid producer. So I want to ask the question for the both of you. What led you to be who you are? Like, what was the point of contact? Well, who did you see? Who did you know? Who did you meet that made you believe that the things that you do are possible?
Oh, for me, it would be my parents, absolutely, 110%. Watching them grow up, my dad, he taught baseball when I was a kid. So on every team from the age of 6 to 15, he was either the head coach or was coaching in some form or fashion. And my mom was right along with her, being a team mom, being the scorekeeper or bringing snacks. So it was that family unit that made me see, or that gave me the drive. You know, I look at my kids and I see the fire in their belly. It was my parents that gave me the fire in my belly to continue on after I left the house. And I think that's the important. If you've got the fire in your belly, no matter where you get it from, it could be your parents, it could be the guy on the street, but if you've got that fire in your belly, that's going to be your constant driver when it's time to wake up at 5:30 in the morning and you've got to study or you've got to write a paper. What drives you to get from A to B? And it's got to be internal. No one can give it to you. It's got to come from within.
Absolutely.
Love it.
Yeah. For me, it was both my parents, but in particular, my Puerto Rican mom. She knew what diversity was before we even understood it. She married a African-American male, and that was not okay in their day. And she had the look of what they would perceive to be as a white person, but she knew that her black children would be judged differently. And so she always pushed us to be excellent and to be better than good, and always told us that we could be whatever we wanted to be. And it wasn't until about 13 years old, because she kept telling us, you know, you can be whatever you want to be, president of the United States. So as a child, people would always ask me, what would you like to be when you grow up? I said, I'm going to be the first female quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. You
know? Oh, wow.
I love it.
So talk about dreaming big. But through that,
love it.
Through my mother and her pushing and supporting, you know, I just love what I do. And raising money, it's not difficult. It can be complicated sometimes, but it's not too difficult simply because of my mother, I don't take no for an answer easily. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's excellent. That's excellent. And I think I'm the last one left with this question then. I think for me, it was the fact of knowing that, well, I spoke to my family once I actually got accepted into my doctorate program, and I spoke to them, and they was saying that, well, you'll be the very first. You're the very first to get accepted. Now go and actually be the first. So it was that notion of being the very first in my family to earn a doctorate. And, you know, I always say it's not just for me. It's for my family as a whole. So this is something for all of us. And it's not just for my family. It's for the community as well. I always think about W.B. Du Bois when I think about going to college and getting a higher education. So there's that 10% of us that, you know, is going to lift the race to the next level. And I wanted to be a part of that 10%. I want to do my part in making sure I go back and help someone else get to this level as well. Because if I can do it, I'm from Mississippi. So if I can do it, and my graduating class, when I graduated in 1986, had 34 students.
Wow.
And I graduated number 6 out of 34. So if I can do it, I know absolutely any kid listening right now, any college student, whomever that's listening right now, can do it as well.
That's awesome.
The talented 10. You know, and this is what diversity brings.
Yep.
This wealth of experience, this wealth of understanding, this fire in the belly. We get to be the fire starters.
And in the words of our university, we are different, daring, and diverse.
Love
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Well said.
Well, and I think for us, that is a wrap, y'all. That's
thank
a
you
wrap.
So much for having us.
Thank you very
wonderful.
Much.
Thank you.
For more Let's Talk UNLV, be sure to follow us on social media where you can get the latest updates on the show plus great behind-the-scenes content. We're on Facebook at Let's Talk UNLV Podcast, Twitter at Let's Talk UNLV, and Instagram at Let's Talk UNLV Pod.